Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another series of Rahalastapa Book Club. I'm delighted to be joined by the fabulous David Quantick, who's written a marvellous book, which I had here with me a second ago. It's disappeared. That's spooky in itself. It's called Ricky's Hand. No, it's gone. That's weird, isn't it? It's like, that's a bit like the book itself, David, I came here with the book and it's vanished. Let's write a novel about that.
Gone to another dimension.
it's an audio podcast. It doesn't matter. I don't need the book. So lovely to see you, David. We worked together many years ago on The Hour, though not in the same room very often.
No, it was a lot. It was a heck of a long time ago.
Where are they now, eh?
Where are those losers now? Dead.
I don't know what happened to any of them. Do you want to tell? I mean, you are very well known in the industry, and I think people would obviously know your work, but they might not know you yourself as this sort of writing genius behind so much stuff. Do you want to give us a brief précis of what you've done and who you are?
Okie doke. Went to university in London, became a music journalist for the Enemy and others for about 20 years, then started writing for Armando Iannucci programs, still doing that. Written for loads and loads of different programs, including Harry Hill's TV Burp and Veep, and also wrote loads of books from Grumpy Old Men on Holiday to my current series of non-award-winning science fiction novels.
So, which Ricky's Hand is the latest one, and I think what's quite interesting before we get onto Ricky's Hand is that looking at your previous science fiction books, and you've written how-to manuals on writing and all sorts of other things as well, and lots of other TV and films. But you sort of the first one seemed to be published on Kindle, and then you went to Unbound, and now you're with a publisher, Titan, which I think, you know, is an interesting route to go, and obviously is a route for people who might be struggling to find a publisher or might just want to try their hand. Can you take us through the sort of the logic of how you started to write these sci-fi books and get them out there?
Sure. I wrote at the turn of the century a comic science fiction novel called Sparks in the kind of Douglas Adams style. And I nearly got it published. I had an agent who liked it, and then suddenly emailed me and said, sorry, I can't do this. So obviously he was got at by Mossad. There's no other explanation. And it sort of languished. And then my wife basically said, there's this thing called the internet, and sent me some articles. So I put it on Amazon and got a nice quote off Neil Gaiman about it. And it's a confidence thing, because even though I've been writing for years, I'd never had anything made that was just my name on it. You know, I'd always written for other people or not had things made.
Yeah.
And so having that done, and then I went to Unbound with other books, and one of them got reviewed, and it was quite a favourable review, but it was like, wow, I can actually do this, which was a genuine shock, because I saw having a book out, like getting a book published, a bit like learning to drive, in that it was something I had no idea that I could do.
Yeah.
And then I got Unbound published stuff, and then it was like, oh, I can do this. And then I had another idea, which was a horror novel called All My Colors. And it was like, there was never any doubt that it was a good book. It was doubt that it would get published. And ever since that, I've never looked back, as it were.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is interesting because you were such an established writer and, you know, and did have books out, as you say. And so it is one of the, if there are writers listening to this, which I hope there are, it is kind of one of the most sort of difficult things is to, I think, especially maybe with something like sci-fi, where there's lots of people trying to do it and lots of people doing it quite badly. And there's probably a lot of people self-publishing and doing quite bad stuff. But it's quite a difficult thing to get that. Obviously, when they become big, they become massive. But it's difficult to get that thing across the line, and it's often difficult to persuade people to go with it, especially if it's an unusual idea, I suppose.
Well, for me, it was the crossover, which I'd had before, because when I'd been a music journalist, it was kind of hard to get taken, as it were, seriously as a comedy writer.
Yes.
It was like, you go to a show and they'd be like, yeah, we'll give you some work. We'd like you to do some song parodies. It's like, okay, because that's what we used to do at the NME. You know, rhyming couplet attacks on Coldplay and Public Enemy. So I ended up writing song lyrics for funny songs for Spitting Image for a while.
Yeah.
And then having established myself a bit as a comedy writer, it's like, you write science fiction. And it's really bizarre because people go, oh, I loved your book. You know, what, the one where the aliens came and disemboweled everyone, ate their brains and, you know, went around in the costume of dead dogs. Yeah, it's really funny. It's like, it's not a comedy. But it says on the front, you know, writer of Veep. Yeah, but it's quite bizarre that people do perceive things according to reputation. So presumably when I'm 90, I'll be trying to write operas and everyone go, it's a science fiction classic.
Well, it is definitely difficult to get out of one box into another box, and people do. Yeah, and though, you know, this novel, Ricky's Hand, is certainly funny as well as being a proper sci-fi novel. There's humorous stuff in it, and the characters are interesting and deep and flawed and thus funny. Do you want to tell us a bit? Again, I'm always cautious with when talking to people who've written a novel, and especially with something like this, which really depends, so much of it depends on what the hell is going on and the joy of finding out what the hell is going on. So I don't want to give anything away. Do you want to give your précis of the concept of this book that you're happy with going out to the public without ruining anything?
I will do that. Yeah, I mean, a long time ago, I had a hangover and I was in the bathroom and my hand looked wrong. You know, when you're sort of not physically right. And I was looking at my hand and it was the wrong colour for a hand and it was sort of the wrong... And I, for a moment, I was convinced, I think, that it was someone else's hand.
Yeah.
And just that image of someone looking at their hand and it's like, it's not their hand. So, and I couldn't think of anything to do with it. And I actually wrote a 2000 AD Future Shock script, which was rejected for being too old-fashioned. So up yours, 2000 AD. And then I abandoned it, and then I finally saw a way of doing it. So it's about a man called Ricky, named after the Fad Gadget song, who wakes up, he's got someone else's hand. How does he know? It's a different size, a different shape, and the F word is written on the knuckles, which is a bit of a clue. And after that, it was like, well, how did this happen? And then it's like, oh, well, you know, a few weeks later, he wakes up, he's got someone else's leg. And you think, well, where's this going? This is going all the way, you know. And then it develops, he meets other people who are in this position. And then it's like the explanation for it, I would say, and I've wrote the book, it's an unlikely explanation, but then there is no likely explanation for waking up with someone else's hand on the end of your arm. And the way in for me was that sometimes when you write stuff, again, confidence, it's like, what voice is this? Because one thing about being from the West Country is anytime you do anything, you write something, people go, oh, I heard that in your voice. It's like, great. I've just written a novel set in, you know, Florida with Americans in it. Everyone's hearing somebody going like, good morning, I'd like a Frappuccino, please, if you don't mind. So with one book I'd written, Sparks was sort of Douglas Adams, and it's very easy to go down that route badly. Yes. All My Colors, I wanted to write a 1970s Stephen King novel. And with this one, it's like, well, it's Florida. It's got somebody with a limb problem. I don't know if you've read Carl Heisen, but
no,
he's great. He's sort of like a kind of Dayglow Elmore Leonard. And in all his books, they're all set in Florida. They're all crime novels. They're very Elmore Leonard. And he has a running joke that in every book, somebody has something horrific happen to one of their limbs.
Right.
In one of his books, somebody is bitten by a rabid dog, which he then beheads, but the dog's head won't come off his hand. So it starts to rot and he becomes infected with dog disease. So I didn't go that. So my book is actually less extreme. But I wrote a Carl Heisen sci-fi novel. So no one's done that. So I'm safe there at least.
Yeah, I love that that's the genesis of it. I thought there might be some sort of Kafka metamorphosis kind of thing. You go, he wakes up and something's changed and maybe that was the influence. But I love the fact that it came from you being over and not recognising your own hand. It is sort of intriguing and it's a great concept. And the characters are great, which we'll talk about in a sec, but I suppose with sci-fi, this is exactly the kind of genre that I would really love to write in as well, and all have always just wimped out or been too scared or not thought it was good enough. And I came up with an idea that we nearly did as a TV show that now would seem a bit passé, which is about alternate universes and stuff. That's within that. I spent a lot of time trying to think of the logic of how alternate universes would work and if you were shifting in between them, what it would mean and the rules of it. And I suppose there's a sci-fi twist to this, which we won't discuss, but I don't think you get as bogged down as I did in the logistics of how it would work or having to explain how the twist would work. You sort of just say this happens and you get on with it. Was that a deliberate decision, or was that just because it was too hard to think of a logical way to explain it?
I'm very much of the school of thought of make it work for. It's like you've got it. So you've got Lord of the Rings, right, where Tolkien sits down, and because he's a professor of whatever at university land, he makes up all these languages and a complex mythology for five or six different cultures. Then you've got C.S. Lewis, who comes along, does talking horses, and later on somebody says, how come some of the horses can talk and some of them can't? He's like, oh, yeah, I'll do that in book six. Or you've got, like, George R.R. Martin, you know, where he's got loads of characters who speak in different languages, and there are no made-up languages. Someone came along and made up a language for him. So with this book, I did read several books by the bloke who wrote Invasion of the Body Snatchers, whose name escapes me. He wrote some fantastic time travel novels. And the way people time travel, not giving away too much in his books, because he doesn't really care about the process, is basically they sit down in a Victorian room and think Victorian thoughts. And but what's great about the book, because he's so good, he creates this atmosphere and you find yourself sort of slipping mentally. And so I tried to do that. I mean, it's not quite as simple as that. It does basically in my book. Oh, I've slightly given something away, but say there was time travel in my book, it would slightly involve sitting in a room and thinking about the past.
Yes.
So I don't care about science. I think it's all made up anyway.
Well, it is. Once you get into sort of the supernatural and sci-fi, it is all made up. So you can go anywhere. And I think that's, you know, I think it's because it's so easy, I think, when writing stuff like this to get bogged down. And then worry about stuff. And actually, all you need to do is keep the story going and know what. I mean, people like me who are nerds and get upset might go, but that doesn't make sense because they said, nah, nah. But, you know, mainly most people are reading it to be entertained and you really get carried along by the story in this. And I think a lot of it is obviously to do with the characters, which, I mean, Ricky is a paparazzo. And he sort of becomes involved with one of the people he's stalking, basically, in terms of they're both suffering from this body swap thing going on. And so they're enemies, but they or not enemies, or they're fight. You know, she doesn't like him, but they come to form an alliance. Obviously, you did work within the music industry, and presumably saw people like this, the pop stars and the paparazzi. Was that an influence at all from your own experience, or was it just let's?
Well, I mean, it worked with the story because it was the Florida setting and the Carl Heisen thing. I thought something would be fun in the celeb world. It's really easy to write celeb stuff because everyone just make it up and you can be silly and outrageous. I was interested in writing a grubby character.
Yeah.
You know, there's that sort of noir tradition of Philip Marlowe thing. And I like the idea. I like the idea of heroes who are unpleasant. Yes. Most of my characters are quite unpleasant people in the stories I've written, or just useless. And I kind of like the idea that this was this slightly grizzling, venal man who's just making money photographing basically women's bottoms for money. Yes. And yeah, so I just took it from there, really. My favourite character in it is his sister, who's a cop.
Yes.
And just hates him.
But it's, you do sort of like this guy, even though he is scum, basically. And you wouldn't like to be, you know, his friend. But within what happens to him, and, you know, he has a self-awareness, I suppose, and sort of tragedy to him. But it's a very appealing character straight away,
and then for this thing
to then happen to him straight away makes it, you know, you're just hooked in, because it's a you know, it's sort of like you say, it's a simple premise, is that and the way that it's come about is what if you suddenly had someone else's hand on your arm. That's a sort of simple premise that you then expand out into this, you know, whole universe of craziness. But you know, it's very important, I suppose, isn't it, in any novel to make sure whether the characters are nice people or not, that we're interested in them. So that's the skill of this, I think.
Well, I did want it to be funny. I mean, if he'd been some sort of clean cut character, you know, like, oh no, you'd just be like, oh mate, your life is great. Who cares about your flipping hand? You know, go and get a new one. Whereas this bloke, he's got nothing. You know, he's an alcoholic, he's living on the floor. So there's all things that I could identify with from my youth. And just his vinyl, you know, it's funny when bad things happen to not very good people. And then it was just nice to have the opposite of the other person this is happening to, who's a young woman who's a famous pop star who's having quite a difficult life. So put them together, it is the opposites thing. And then you just get loads of, I'll just admit it now, time-traveling terrorists.
Good. Well, you know, I'll put out their spoilers in here before we start. Because, but, you know, it you wouldn't be able to predict what's going to happen regardless. So you'll still have lots of fun finding your way through that. And there is someone whose penis gets swapped as well, which, you know, is the obvious. I was hoping that would come up, but and it's very lightly done, and it's only incidental. But there is that presumably would be part of this eventually if the whole body's getting swapped.
Well, I mean, you've just got to be honest about it, and it's like, you know, it's always that thing that people say at school. You know, if I was a man who woke up in the body of the woman, and it's like they then detail the revolting things that they. And it's the same with this. If you woke up with somebody else's hand or somebody else's penis.
Yeah.
There are certain things that you would certainly consider doing just to see what it was like.
Yes.
And again, yeah, as you say, I've skated around that in the book. There could always be a sequel whose title would be unrepeatable here.
Is there any particular part of your body you would like to... It's quite a good emergency question for me, if you could swap
one
part of your body with anyone else.
Your emergency questions a lot. I think it would be my nose, because the rest of me is irredeemable. The nose is at least in the middle.
Yeah.
It would help me be more... My nose is one of those things that, you know, the moment you think nose, I just can't stop seeing it. And it looks like just a red, pink blob. It looks like kind of lava pretending to be a nose to get into a party. So, yeah, I think that's a great question. What part of your body would you change? I think my nose. Yeah.
I mean, but it's also got to be at random with someone you don't know who you're going to get. So you could get a a worse nose or a nose that doesn't, you could get a tiny little button nose. Would you like that on your face? So, you know, it's that's the danger.
Well, that's the thing about comedy. It's almost, I'm sure you're familiar with the melon joke. The man who was given by a genie an orange for a head. I was watching a film with a genie in it, and I'm thinking, I would be the person who, if I met a genie who granted me my heart's desire, I would say, just to be funny, I'd like my head to be a tiny orange, which I would regret forever. But it would be worth it for 2 seconds just to see the genie going, what? No, go on, orange me up, make me a mandarin.
Yeah, you do have to be careful. Be careful what you wish for is you know, and also don't deliberately wish for something that will pull you apart.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So let's talk a little bit about, because I haven't read these books, but you've written 2 books about how to be a writer, which I think people listening to this podcast might be interested in. Is it possible to get across your 30 odd years of experience in a book? How easy was that book to write?
Well, it was fun because I interviewed a lot of my friends. The notion of it was, it was called How to Write Everything, because the thing was that I'm a hack. You know, I've literally written, you know, everything from wedding speeches and funny underpants jokes for Spitting Image to novels and movie stuff. And I just thought it'd be good to write a book that encompassed all of it, because you always get, you know, with these books, it's like, how to write a movie. First, make sure the format is final draft, whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought it'd be interesting to see what everyone had in common. So in one of the books, I asked everybody when they wrote. And it was really interesting because everybody, even though it's complete fiction, said, best time to write is in the morning when you're fresh, except for the crime writers who said we write at night because it's scary.
That's interesting. I do sort of ask similar stuff to that, and you do get quite, I mean, because you do so much. I'm a very scattergun, last minute and, you know, disorganized person, and I find it usually, I'm up against deadlines, if not missing them. Are you quite regimented and manage to write every day, or are you like that as well?
It's a bit of both. I mean, because I come from the music press, the weekly deadline was such a great thing. It's like, we need it in now or you don't get paid. Great. And also conciseness. I can't believe that someone can write a 50,000 word novel. I wrote a book recently, and it was about 100,000 words, and I did an edit, and it was now, then it became really tiny.
Right.
I'm really in the, like people like Mickey Spillane, who could write a novel on speed in a fortnight. That's my dream. I'm a bit disciplined. I mean, when I've got a book on, I always write a certain amount of words every day, 5 days a week.
Right.
Keeps me sane, gives me a goal. But yeah, and most things, it's when I will write it. If I can, I'll write it the night before.
Yes. I mean, I find it very hard, unless pressed by a deadline, to not just get stuck. And I think I saw you write this somewhere that you just have to, or certainly it's very good writing advice that I failed to follow, which is just write, and you know, just get it written and just keep on writing, because being a writer is about writing. And so if you get stuck on a word or get stuck on an idea, just sort of put blah, blah, blah and carry on. But that's the thing that I find the most difficult is to do that sort of diarrhea draft, the first draft of stuff with, and even if I know no one's going to read it, to let that out into the world. Is that the secret to getting something the length of a novel done?
Well, for me, the secret is going round the back, basically. It's like, if you're delivering a parcel, go round the back if no one's in. It's just like, write something else. If you're stuck in a book where, you know, it's like you've got the moment where somebody says, the murderer is, or, you know, suddenly I love you, she said. And the reason is, just go and do something else for a bit. Walk the dog, get drunk, go and write something else. Yes. Or just do random writing. It's amazing. It's like, I used to make compilation tapes, and they would always start off with some random song at the start, and then they would sort of ease into it. It's like, oh, this is like a punk rock love tape, and the first song would be rubbish. That's a terrible analogy, but if you just go and write something, like those awful, like, you know, awful musicians improvising, if you keep playing nonsense for an hour or so, eventually you might write a good bit of tune which you can use.
Sure.
And you can do that with writing, because no one's going to stop you. You just write 1,000 words of rubbish, and then at the end you might write, one day he woke up and he had someone else's penis. And you think, there's a story.
Yeah, it is. Oh, you know, it's, I mean, I suppose that your real genius and your skill is that you're sort of adept across all these different disciplines and still able to sort of, you know, get the work done. Do you think that is that for you? Because for me, I like to do like stand up, and I like to do podcasts, and I like to do a bit of writing, and they're all quite different. Does the variety of writing different sorts of fiction and sketches and whatever, does that keep it interesting for you, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, totally. Yeah. I mean, if I had the skills, I would do what you do. I would do different kinds of speech and performing stuff. Because, A, it keeps you interested. It's more fun. But, I mean, for me, also, the great advantage is that if I have an idea, I can find the right, I'm sure you do, I can find the right home for it. Like,
yeah.
I had an idea years ago for a comedy thing about a translator who's written an unsuccessful book. Then it's a hit in Mexico, and the reason is his Mexican translator got bored and turned it into an erotic novel, and it's like and with that you're like, okay, it's not going to be a radio play, certainly not going to be a science fiction novel, and you think, it's a rom-com, you know, it's opposites attract, and that was my film Book of Love.
Yes.
And that's the thing, it's like, you have an idea, it's like when I did the horror one, it was like, this is obviously a horror story, this is not going to be a movie or whatever. So yeah.
And do you like the fact that with books, you know, it is obviously yours, whereas often, you know, I haven't seen the film, but I'd seen the trailer of that film and thought, that looks great, but I had no idea that you'd written it until I read your Wikipedia entry. So, you know, there's sort of anonymity to a lot of stuff that you've done. You know, if we think of Veep, people aren't saying, oh, yes, the sitcom written partly by David Quantick, you know, and people are talking about the stars of it or whatever. Is it nice to get your name out there on a book, or are you happy?
Yeah.
Are you happy writing anonymously, or, you know, semi anonymously?
Yeah, because, well, you know what it's like, you know, with On the Hour, you'd have a good joke and it would sort of be subsumed into the mass. And it's not helped by actors who always think that they've written it.
Yes.
You know, you hear people going like, yeah, I mean, Star Trek, man, it was my, it's like, really? You built the models, did you? You wrote the script and sat down. And I've been quite bad that sometimes, you know, if a clip from the thick of it, say, is a viral hit, I will put my hand up and say, that was my bit. And I did literally, I worked on a show called Saturday Zoo with Jonathan Ross. One of the things was he'd read out news type gags. And during rehearsals, if he read out one of my gags, I used to put my hand up. So, and that's one reason I haven't worked much. But yeah. Writers are the ones who don't get credited, and people don't want to know, you know. If Eddie Izzard is a bad example, but what, if you go on stage and do 5 minutes and get a laugh, if by chance I had written it, I'd be furious. I'd be glad he got a laugh, but I'd like, I would want you to hold up a sign saying, Staley Quantic, there.
Yes.
It would make the show very dull. And now, a little tribute to the work of Dan Tetzel.
So writing the novels, you know, that is you, that's you up front. Your name on it, and it's, you know, and it is, I mean, you say it's your voice, which is not necessarily a West Country voice, but it is your voice, and it is exactly your thing. So, it, you know, I can really see that. I've never really got into writing. All my books have been pretty much factual, but, you know, I really would like to get into writing some, you know, stories and novels. So, you know, it is great when you've got such a voice. And, you know, it is, we mentioned, passed on Twitter when I talked to Abigail Burdess, you know, like a funny novel. When someone funny writes a novel, it's like the funniest novel in the world, because most novelists might have like two jokes and then people go, oh, he's so witty. Whereas, you know, this has jokes, but it's, you know, it's humorous all the way through, because you know the beats and you know how to make characters, you know, interesting and funny. But, you know, it is also, it's a very gripping story, and there's violence and danger and death and everything in it, really, you could expect, plus people getting other people's penises. I mean, it's got everything you...
It's everything you want in a novel.
Everything you want. You were born in Yorkshire, right? You were born and grew up in the West Country, which is the same as me. So that's
right.
I was born in Pocklington, so I'm East Ridings and you're West Ridings, right? I was born near York anyway. Did you live in Yorkshire for a while, or did you?
Well, the full story, which won't take long, okay, is that I'm adopted. I was supposed to be born in Long Eaton between Nottingham and Derby.
Okay.
But my birth mother, you know, being 1961, sent away to stay with an aunt near where I was born. I was born in a mother and baby home, put up for adoption. Right. And by chance, my dad, who was from Plymouth, was working in Sheffield at the time. So I got adopted, my sister was adopted, and then my parents basically went back to the West Country. So it was a bit of a shock when I was tracing my family to discover I was from the Midlands. Nothing against the Midlands. My wife is from the Midlands. It's a great place. But I'd always thought that, yeah, I must be somehow some kind of Fred Truman-esque stout Yorkshireman, not a member of UB40.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, have you ever written about that? That's a very interesting... story right?
It gets into things.
Yeah.
It's mentioned in one unpublished book I've got. And I wrote a thing. Oh, there's a website that Sylvia Patterson, the music writer, does called Passing Bodies. And I wrote a letter to my birth mother, who's sadly deceased. That was an interesting exercise. But yeah, I mean, adoption's weird, because you do feel like a sleeper agent. You know, you've got a different... And certainly when I was a kid, you didn't know anything except that you were adopted.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took me ages to find out my birth name, which I'm not telling anyone. It's a proper secret. It took me ages to find out the story of my family. And you just suddenly get this feeling that one day you're going to be activated and suddenly you're going to be Arthur Thompson and you're going to live in Sheffield. That's not my birth name, by the way. No one's ever been called Arthur Thompson. That's a genuine fact.
Wow. That is written. And Stuart as well, also one of the On the Hour writers, was adopted as well, which I'm sure you must have talked to him about. So it's
never talked to him. I mean,
yeah,
that was one of Armando's policies, to only hire adopted people. I think you had to you actually lied at your interview and said you were Arthur Thompson.
I said I was born in Yorkshire, but I grew up in Somerset, so he assumed that like you, yeah. I'd been transported across the country rather than
Chris Morris is actually Danish. Steve Coogan was fostered by dogs. It was a sad place to work.
There is a lot of, you know, there are a lot of comedians who have been adopted, or, I mean, Robin Ince's book I keep going back to, where he talks about this is more stand-up comedians, but comedy writers, I'm sure, as well, is that for, who either have a parent who's died or are adopted, or an authority figure as a parent, which I suppose I had. So I wonder, you know, I wonder how much those things affect your comic sensibilities if you're feeling you know, either sad or like an outsider or like a sleeper agent in life, whether that kind of directs you towards comedy. I don't quite buy it, but there might be something in it.
I have no idea why the lust for attention would make somebody a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And I also just wanted to say I really enjoyed Snodgrass, which is another your works, which, you know, having watched the film yesterday, which is about a similar idea, though not as well executed. That's another. It's coming, these ideas. So that do you want to tell us a little bit about Snodgrass?
Well, Snodgrass wasn't my idea. It's a short story by a science fiction writer called Ian R. McLeod. I was at a party at Kim Newman's house, and he was like, "Oh, you like the Beatles, David?" And he gave me this book, and it was a story. You start reading this book, and it's about a middle-aged man who's a bit of a drunken loser, and suddenly you realise that it's John Lennon, and that this is a parallel universe where John Lennon walked out on the Beatles in 1962. The Beatles never became huge, and yeah, so we did it for Sky, and we got, I've forgotten his name. What's his flipping name?
Oh, David Frellis, is it? Ian Hart.
No. Ian Hart, thank you. Hart had played John Lennon before, and he was amazing. And we went to see a film distributor, and they said, "So, you know, yeah, this thing you've got about John Lennon, the Beatles never making it. Yeah, we're doing this Danny Boyle film called..." And I was like, "Oh, great." It really is, what are the chances? Two come along at once. Ours was better, by the way.
I think yours was better, and I didn't like the fact that they go to meet John Lennon. Spoilers alert for yesterday, but they've spoiled it already. They go to meet John Lennon, and he's just sort of happily living in the shed or somewhere. But like, it doesn't follow, you know. Like, if he'd lived, maybe Paul McCartney would have died. You know, it's like it doesn't. It's not like, oh, if you hadn't been in the Beatles, or if the Beatles had never existed, you'd be happy, or you'd still be alive, or whatever. There's all these things to think about, but so many things would be different. That's when I start getting into this sci-fi nerd who says, "But if you change that, everything would be different and the whole world would be different." But I think the original idea for yesterday was that the guy is the only person who remembers the Beatles, but and then tries to become successful off of the music, but doesn't become successful, which I think is a much better idea.
That's probably the original by Jack Barth, which is much better. But no, I mean, my version, when we did Snodgrass and put it in sort of the TV world, was the idea that the Beatles... had the Beatles, that everything would have happened that happened now, but later. Yes. So we've got Thatcher in power for like 25 years instead of whatever it was, 17. We've got Live Aid happening in the 90s because the famine goes on. We've got the Hollies being, my favourite line in it that I wrote is John Lennon going, "We could have been bigger than the Hollies." And we've got the Beatles in Ian's version being this sort of like, a bit like a chicken in a basket band, you know. They come on, it's like, "Oh, now we're going to do Yesterday," and George, you know, raises his eyebrows, and Ringo's hair has fallen out, and it was a lot of fun. But but the idea that John Lennon would be happy if he hadn't found fame and fulfillment as a songwriter, because he wanted to be a fisherman. Because we're all always hearing about John Lennon's "I Wish I'd Been a Fisherman." Yeah, you know, the album "Instant I Wish I'd Been a Fisherman." Imagine if I'd been a fisherman. Sorry.
It's all right.
Sudden high horse.
The thing in the Beatles that I keep going back to unfortunately, because you've written this already, really, and it's been written, is Paul McCartney after Hamburg going back to work in the factory and getting an offer of promotion, and then them coming saying, "We're playing the Cavern, do you want to come back?" And he had to decide about whether he was going to carry on working at his factory as a middle manager, or go and be in the Beatles. And he chose to be in the Beatles. And just wondering how different the world would have been if he'd gone, "No, I'll take the sensible option."
It's just bizarre. I mean, I think the Beatles were a product of their time too. But I mean, I don't like the Rolling Stones much. And it galls me, the idea that the Rolling Stones would have just walked in and said, "I'll have that." And, you know, just picked up the 60s and taken it with them. And it would have been a bit more alarming. Because the Rolling Stones were proper nasty. I mean, the Beatles were nastier, but the Rolling Stones were officially proper nasty.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Anyway, you know, these things are all, you know, I suppose that's the thing with sci-fi, to get back to Ricky's hand, is that, you know, it is difficult to come up with something that's entirely mind-blowingly different. And often with sci-fi, people almost want the same things to happen. So I think that's what I really enjoyed about this book, was that it's... you know, it is unexpected, and the premise of it is not something that I've really come across really in any way before. So it's, you know, it is, that's the holy grail, is to find a sci-fi idea that can be different. Have you had any interest in or any thoughts about translating it to film or television, this particular book?
I'd like to. I did do some film stuff, talk to some people about adapting an earlier thing. And we have talked, my book agent has talked to people, but nothing has emerged, sadly. Yeah. I mean, I think it would just be a fantastic role for a young up-and-coming actor whose hands look different to each other.
You'd have to have an actor who had different hands, David. And in this day and age, you couldn't superimpose a hand on there. That would be wrong.
I mean, I'm watching the telly. I'm looking at someone like Will Poulter. And any scene where he played a chauffeur, any scene where he lifts his hands up on the wheel, I'm looking at those hands. He's wearing gloves. I'm going, those hands look different sizes. No, it's so disappointing. You know, like once again, symmetrical hands have ruined my film career.
And there's no audiobook, am I right, of this particular book, or did I miss it?
I think Titan decided to cut their losses. There are audiobooks for the others, and they're great. And I learned how to pronounce a few names by listening to them. There's a character in one of them called Beam, and I'm like, I don't know how to pronounce that name. An American read it. Yeah, his name is Beam. Okay. But no, as of yet, unless you want to do it, you know, free.
Sure, why not? Well, you know, it's a very good read. I read it on holiday. I would say it's a great holiday read. You know, it zips along, make you laugh. You'll try to work out what the hell's going on. It just about makes sense if you don't think about it too much.
Or at all.
But no, and you really want to know what's going to happen, and there's real jeopardy in there because it's not like you're thinking, oh, this will definitely be okay, or this, you know, this will definitely turn out as a happy ending because it's written by you. So we know that anything can happen. So I would recommend it. Are you working on any more books, either sci-fi or otherwise?
I've taken a slight break because I've written too many books, and it's like, oh, that book didn't get published. I'll write another one. Oh, that book's not being published. But I've got many ideas. I'm working on lots of things at the moment, and I really hope to have a book out soon.
Good. And is there anything you've been reading yourself that you would like to recommend to our listeners that's not by you?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a book by Simon Stevenson called Set My Heart to Five, which is, I picked it up just because it had a weird title. It's quite a common story. It's the story of an android who wants to be human, but he also wants to be a film writer, which attracted me. So it's told in the style of, a film script, but it's really funny and sad. And it has one of my best ever plot things. It's like, he phones people a lot. He says, because about 30 years ago, the human race somehow locked themselves out of the internet. But I just love that, solving the whole problem of, you know, going online in a novel, the mobile. So like one day, scientists accidentally locked themselves out of the internet, and now they can't get online.
Yes, good. That's good. Well, you know, the minute it's in there, it's gone. This is David Quantick, according to Neil Gaiman, one of the best kept secrets in the world of writing. He could do more work. I mean, he's done giving you a quote. But, you know,
that's fine. He did the bare minimum, but I'm still grateful.
When people say that, he's the best secret, fucking talk about him a bit more then. Absolutely fantastic writer. You'll have enjoyed David's stuff somewhere down the line, even though no one held up a sign saying this was written by David Quantick as they were saying it. And you will really enjoy this book. I do heartily recommend it. I very much enjoyed it. Ricky's Hand. And I'll go, and if I have time when I'm not reading everyone else's books, I'll go back and check out some of your previous sci-fi books as well. Thank you very much to the amazing David Quantick.
Thank you so much, Richard. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, good.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials?
Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.